This episode's got two really interesting topics in it to me. I think they're both very fascinating.
So if you're looking, if you're watching the video right now, this is one of our very first podcasts that we're doing back in our truck, which means that we have finally hit the road in our overlanding rig, and we are down south.
In Mexico.
On the beach. Well,
sort of.
Actually, in a campground right now.
We're in a campground right now. It's not the most fantastic, but I can see the ocean in front of us.
Yeah.
So today's topic, we are talking with our friend Jay Reed, and Jay Reed is a 30 plus year pharmacist, and you may be wondering, how does that tie in to travel? But believe it or not, medical tourism is a very popular topic. We have actually talked about it some. Chris has had LASIK sick in Korea. We've been sick abroad. Medical tourism is fascinating, but today we're talking with Jay about his one. First, we start off with talking about life in Yemen. Now, Yemen is one of those countries that not many people will have ever been to from America or may ever get to go to. It's a very closed off country for us. But Jay actually lived there for 10 years and he worked as a medical professional, as a pharmacist part of the time while he was there. And so he's going to share one, what life was like in Yemen, and two, what it's like with medical care abroad.
Yeah, it really is a fascinating conversation. Jay is just a sweet, like, good guy, and he gives really practical advice. So if you're interested about traveling abroad or domestically and what you should think about when doing that, when it comes in terms of getting medicine or anything medical, this episode is for you. But before we dive into the conversation, if you could please, this is Sarah's favorite part, leave us a review. Yeah, like, if you can go to Spotify or go to iTunes, and if you say something like, hey, Chris is so good looking and Sarah's amazing too.
Okay, just get on with that.
Yeah, so please, that would be amazing. But other than that, we're Chris and Sarah, and we're so happy that you're here with us on What No One Tells You. And we're excited to jump into this conversation with Jay Reed. Today, we're here with a good friend, Jay Reed. Jay, thanks for being here, man.
I'm excited. This is going to be fun.
Yeah. So where, first of all, let's just, who are you? Like, where are you? What do you do? Like, what is this? Like, who are you, Jay?
Okay. All right. Well, I'm Jay Reed. I'm actually, as we speak, I'm in Starkville, Mississippi, which is sort of in the shadow of Mississippi State. I did attend the other university up north, Ole Miss, for pharmacy school. So, yeah, so I went to school thinking I was going to be a biomedical engineer. I was going to make hearts and legs and things and, you know, build a bionic man. And pretty quickly realized engineering was not for me. Went a couple of, you know, did the whole change my major thing. But ended up, I was at Ole Miss and there was a pharmacy school there. Had never really thought about it, but it just kind of, after looking at all the different things and checked all the boxes, you know, it was in the medical field, had the STEM stuff. And, but I didn't have to stay up all night on call like a doctor would. So I thought that was a pretty good aspect. So, and it's been good to me. It's changed a lot over the, since, you know, in the 30 plus years I've been doing it, but, it's been good to me.
So you've been a pharmacist for over 30 years.
Yeah. I graduated in 91. So 33, 34, whatever that adds up to.
So were you a part of the movement back in the day where you would like stand on the elevated like floor? So you look down upon
the pharmacy I work in now still has an elevated floor.
Okay. What's up with that? I'm pretty sure it's a Seinfeld episode. Why do they stand higher up?
I really don't. I think I've probably read it before, but I really don't know. I think maybe it's so you can see out. Cause you know, a lot of pharmacies are, like, the actual filling part is in the back of the store. So I think it might be so you can see out. mostly it's just so people can see you, I guess. I don't know. It's sort of a fishbowl kind of a thing. So.
I don't know.
There's probably, a lot of places I've worked do not have that. Okay. But when I started this place a few years ago, a little independent, it was theirs. I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
So funny. I've never understood that. They have sort of disappeared, though.
They have. I feel like we're on even playing ground with a lot of pharmacists now, so which is nice. It feels like they don't have the high ground anymore. So
besides standing high above all of us in Mississippi, where has pharmacy, being a pharmacist, how would you phrase that? Where has being a pharmacist taken you? We know personally that you've been to a lot of incredible places. So tell us about your career abroad.
I moved to, went from Mississippi to Asheville, North Carolina. I lived there. I'm sure you've been there. It's an awesome place. And I lived there for a few years and met my wife there. We both kind of came there from different places. And she, when I met her, she told me, I feel like I'm probably going to end up living overseas one day. I'm like, okay, well, if you're going, I'm going too. So, so began kind of looking at that and had an opportunity to go to Ukraine first. That was my first sort of overseas trip that wasn't Canada. Mm-hmm. Well, I went to South Africa as a teenager, but not for this, not for pharmacy. Yeah. But went to Ukraine and just kind of was on a medical trip, and we just kind of did little clinics here and there. And that kind of got the bug of, you know, I could do pharmacy someplace besides Mississippi and or North Carolina or whatever. So we ended up, and this is going to sound crazy, but we ended up in Yemen, of all places.
Wow.
And
that's extreme.
it was, and it was just kind of a series of connections and relationships and found this opportunity and got there and actually lived there for about 10 years.
Wow.
Off and on. We came back a time or two, but stem to stern, it was 10 years. I did some pharmacy in the beginning, and then I kind of dipped my toe in the relief and development world and found out I wasn't that great at that, and ended up teaching English, but I was kind of in the context of a medical school. Okay. Spoken English with some of the professors from one of the medical schools there. But I kept my license up that whole time, and I didn't ever lost my license, kept that current. And so when we came back to the States in 2009, I pretty much could hit the ground running. I had to get my license in Mississippi because I was didn't have it here. Grew up here, but it was a license in North Carolina. So I had a few little paperwork things to do, but pretty much hit the ground running. And I've done retail pretty much, but some compounding, some this and that. Never was much into the hospital side of it. I was a little bit nervous about making IVs for people. But I've kind of kept it in the retail world. And from Yemen, we went to a bunch of places. We decided if we're going to live there on the other side of the world, we're going to see as much as we can. So, my wife's been to Thailand and China. I haven't been to those places, but we went to Jordan, Egypt, Kenya, Ethiopia, South Africa. Let's see, London, spent some time in London. Flew through a lot of places, right. A lot of airports on my map.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not necessarily saw the country.
Yeah.
France, went to France once. So it was a good time in that regard.
Wow.
You hit up some places that most people will never, even avid travelers will probably, may never see in their lifetime, specifically Yemen. I mean, as Americans, like we just can't really go there or don't. It's not necessarily the best place for us to go. So not right now. So could you tell us what was Yemen like? Because I think there's a lot of mystery for people like us around like the Middle East, especially just like it seems so foreign to us. So like what was life like there for an entire decade living in a country where most people don't know anything about?
Right. Well, it started off, I was the same way. The first couple of times I saw Yemen mentioned anywhere, I looked at it on the map and got probably the same sort of stereotypical assumptions that anybody would. It's below Saudi on the Arabian Peninsula. It's bound to be a desert and all this. And so but when I went there for a couple of weeks before we actually moved, just to kind of test the waters. And I stayed in Ibb, which is maybe the fourth or fifth largest city. And it's in the mountains. They call it the Green Province. And it is just gorgeous. If you see any pictures of Yemen, you'll see these terraces along the mountains where they've over, hundreds of years have built out these terraces to farm. A lot of times they're growing cotton, which is not, great. But anyway, there's all kinds of agriculture. And we were there during some difficult times. We were there when the USS Cole was hit, down in Aden, when the American ship, and we were there. There was some assassinations of some folks at a hospital there, and we were nearby there.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
There was, and then 9/11 came, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you have all this stuff. And so the funny thing was when 9/11 happened, my mom called, of course, and was worried about us. And I says, like, well, actually, maybe you should come here because we're safe over here.
Yeah.
Maybe you should leave the U.S. and come over here.
Yeah.
She didn't appreciate that very much. But yeah, it was. I say all that to say when that happened, the people were so generous and hospitable. And that's probably one of the hallmarks of the culture there is hospitality. And what we found is they wanted us in their homes, and several people would come and say, look, if you have any trouble, you come to my house.
Oh, wow.
We'll take care of you.
Wow.
They would feed us. They would, all kinds of stuff like that. Just I would go to a wedding and I would have never met the groom, but I'm sitting next to him on the pedestal at the wedding.
Oh,
it's
my gosh.
Just crazy stuff because it's so hospitable. Yeah. So it's not all desert. There is some desert. It can be, you know, I know y'all are in a warm place right now. And if you get down on the coast of Aden, Hodeida in the middle of the summer, it was rough.
Yeah.
But most of the places we lived were more in the mountains and it was temperate enough to be tolerable as far as that goes.
Wow. I never thought of it. Well, actually, you know, I was about to say, I never thought of it being green. We're going to take a little tangent here really fast because we are curious about this. I mean, you know that we love coffee and Yemen. So it's disputed like who discovered coffee, but it's between Ethiopia and Yemen is what we've been told. And we've heard some of the best, most, we've tried Yemen coffee before and it's incredible.
Yeah.
Did you try any good coffee there?
When I was there, here's the funny thing. They're famous for it. And right now, because I know y'all are deep into the coffee show, right now there's several people who are really nurturing the coffee business there. Because what I've understood is it was always good, but it was kind of inconsistent in the quality.
Sure.
And so right now you've got folks who are there and are trying to help with the consistency and I don't know, the coffee grader ratings are like 98% or crazy numbers, you know, if you're into that kind of stuff. But we didn't drink much coffee there. Hmm. That was what was weird. They're tea drinking people.
Oh, okay.
So we drank a lot of tea, there's all kinds of variations of that. I had a couple of coffee trees in one of the houses we lived in, I got like 15 beans or cherries or whatever. Not enough to do anything with. But I had friends who would go to the market. They would buy the green beans. They would roast them themselves.
Wow.
And, you know, it was great when they did it. But I'm much more into coffee now than I was then. Mm-hmm. The story, I think I've decided that it was discovered in Ethiopia, but nurtured in Yemen.
Okay.
And then Yemen was the port of Mocha was the first port where it was exported to the West.
Wow.
That's kind of where that word mocha comes from, too.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Interesting.
Have you heard of the book, The Monk of Mocha?
Yeah.
I love that.
Okay.
Book.
I actually have not read it.
I actually knew one of the guys in the book.
Oh, really?
Until I read it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So cool.
So
cool.
Well, I'd run into there was one of the, was mentioned. So, yeah, that's an amazing book. So, and he's one of the guys that's kind of taking the lead in this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, you probably heard us talk about our favorite coffee shop in Chattanooga. They roast, and they actually source from Yemen occasionally. It's like one of their very special kind of things. But, yeah, he's the one who turned us on to that book. And Chris has read it, and he's fascinated by Yemen.
It's
so I think he'll be really interested in hearing this episode.
Yeah.
Coffee aside,
yeah.
Tell us more about the. We can go on about coffee for a while.
We brought you on for like a certain reason, Jay, not just to talk about coffee. Yeah.
So, I do. Before we move into like the medical side, because we have a lot of people in our audience who have heard us talk about like medical tourism and maybe people. Mm. There's some nerves around maybe getting medical care overseas. But before we get there, could you tell us a little bit more about like the culture of Yemen? Like you mentioned the wedding, and you said people are really hospitable. But what is the everyday life look like there? Because I mean, it's so unknown to us. I mean, neither one of us have ever been to that region of the world.
No.
So Yemen specifically, what makes it unique?
Well, you know, I've traveled to I've visited other Middle Eastern countries, but haven't lived there. So I guess my perspective is a little centered in one spot, but like a typical day, I mean, they would get up and, you know, start the day about like us. There's government jobs and there's private jobs and there's the open markets, you know, all those things. Yemen is, I'm going to say, unique in that it's just ancient. Mm. I mean, literally ancient. And some of the places we visited, there was one little village, I can't remember the name of it, but like a kingdom had once ruled from that area. Wow. And you could go around to and look at the houses, and there were bricks in the house, like, among the mud bricks, there were other bricks that had been taken from a palace, and you could see carvings on them and stuff like that, that they had just more or less salvaged from the palace. And where we lived in Ib, Queen Arwa, I think, she wasn't the Queen of Sheba. That was Bilqis over in Marib, which is kind of out towards the east. I'm not great with geography, but Queen Arwa was the queen of Yemen at one point, and her palace is right there in Jibla, which is right outside of Ib. And I don't know what it is today, but even when we were there at the beginning, you could take a tour, but it was like this guy sitting outside that would give you a tour. It wasn't a a well-developed tourist place, but historic. I mean, just crazy old stuff. The wall, the big gate in Sana'a, you know, the old city there is just thousands of years old. Yeah. It's just nuts. And so I say all that because there's plenty of modern there. I mean, we eventually started out with dial-up internet when we got there. Let's get real. And when we, at the end, we had, was it ASL? My terminology is.
Or DSL?
Out of date. Yeah. So it wasn't Wi-Fi really. I mean, it wasn't cable in or anything like that, but it was much better.
Yeah.
Much better.
Yeah.
And so we saw a lot happen. Cell phones, you know, came while we were there.
Interesting.
All that stuff. But you're asking about the culture. Very, like they eat small in the morning. Mm-hmm. Lunch is the big meal.
Interesting.
Dinner's light. Mm. I eat bean sandwiches for breakfast. You know, this is going to be real random, but because I'm into food now. Uh-huh. I mean, that's my whole thing. But they would go through about mid-afternoon, and then about mid-afternoon, it's not like the Spanish siesta or what I've heard about it, but things kind of slow down about that time. They'll go home for lunch, maybe take a nap, and they come back to work for the, like, especially in the market. Mm-hmm. And they're just kind of chilling. I don't know if you've heard of cot. You know, cot is a big thing there. It's like a bush that they chew the leaves on. And it's kind of it's described as more like of an amphetamine kind of thing, but it actually kind of chills you out too. It's very odd. You can look it up, the chemical side of it, but it makes you more alert, but also everybody's just sitting around chewing it. So it's kind of a paradoxical thing. But they do that most of the afternoon, the men and the women. There's a lot of separation of men and women. Okay. It's kind of typical in that way. So my wife would go visit her friends and I would go visit my friends, and occasionally we would go visit together. But even if we visited together, most of the time we were in different rooms.
Wow.
Wow.
They're going to give you tea and something to nibble on when you go. Like I said, very hospitable, want to make you happy. I'm probably other questions I could answer for kind of the gist of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, it's not as different as you'd think. I mean, we lived in a house with a gate. A lot of the houses are gated. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have, you know, a little bit of, you have privacy for the most part, and security. But not so much. I mean, everybody's speaking Arabic, of course.
Right.
The bigger cities, you're almost always going to find people speaking English as well. So my wife was really good at Arabic. I was mediocre.
Still, and, any level of that is pretty impressive.
My daughter was born there.
Wow.
Yeah, and so she had the best ear for it. She had, you know, she grew up literally from day one hearing it.
Wow.
And so I'd use her to translate for me sometimes.
Wow.
Okay, that was actually going to be one of my next questions, is I know you have kids. So how old were your kids when you guys were in Yemen? I mean, you said your daughter was born there.
Yeah, Jacob, my son, was 1.5 when we moved there.
Oh, my word.
And then Lauren was born there, I don't know, a year and a half or so later.
That's amazing.
And that was different, too.
Yeah. We've heard
she was born in a house.
Wow. Okay, I want to get to the medical stuff here in a second, because I know that's why we brought you on this. But I am curious. I'm always like, on these tangents, because I'm so fascinated.
I love talking about it. It's fine.
Does she have dual citizenship?
I think she could, but doesn't.
Okay.
But she also has more birth certificates than any person I've ever known. She has one from the hospital. Like, we weren't in the hospital, but we were near one. And like an international hospital, they closed their delivery room, but they said, well, we have a house here on our compound. You can have the baby there. And if there's any trouble, you can come down to the hospital. So we had a room full of oxygen and suction and, you know, in the second bedroom. And then we were in there in the other room. So we have a certificate from there, which I then had to take to the government to get a Yemeni birth certificate, which I then took to the embassy to get, I think it's a certificate of birth abroad.
Oh my gosh.
So that she had three before we left town. And then when we came back here, I needed an extra copy and I wrote the State Department. They said, well, you can't get another one of these, but we have this other document and I forget what the name of it is. So she has four separate birth certificates.
Wow.
Two of which are legal and two of which are fun.
Yeah.
And one which you have to know Arabic to read.
Yeah.
So. Wow. That's really interesting, actually. So have your kids, I'm just wondering, like, I know they're grown now, but Have any of them done anything with their careers that have been impacted by their growing up in Yemen, like anything with Arabic? Or, I mean, what does that look like? I mean, I can't imagine like their upbringing was so different than what ours was.
So, I mean, we've talked about medical tourism on our YouTube channel. Like, I mean, I went to Korea and got LASIK, mm-hmm. and we've had friends.
Right, I remember.
Yeah, we've had friends who
had babies overseas too.
They've had babies in Mexico or mm-hmm. wherever. And so when it comes to like travel and medical things, you know, mm-hmm. Let's dive into like first as a first timer, you know, if you're going abroad, we know people who go to Mexico or other countries and they try to buy, you know, medicine outside the country. Mm-hmm. What are there any like tips? Are there any like good practices? Like what? Let's just like dive into the whole like nitty gritty of this.
Can we use your EpiPen as an example?
Sure.
Okay. So Chris has nut allergy and he was given a prescription from his doctor for an EpiPen because he's not that bad, but he should probably carry one now because it's gotten worse.
Right.
And we're like, well, maybe we'll get it in Mexico where it's cheaper. Okay. So maybe like getting prescription medicine abroad, like safety tips as a pharmacist, like what do you recommend and not recommend?
Okay, well, I'll disclaim that I don't have a lot of experience in that, aside from, you know, when I was dispensing it myself over there. So this is like definitely medical disclaimer here. We're not giving any medical advice, just travel tips.
Yes,
from somebody who happens to be a pharmacist.
We don't have our email on here. Like, please do not contact us.
We are not medical advisors.
Right. My overall thought, and I looked this up a little bit too, and basically just try not to do that, I think, is the best advice.
Okay.
And the reason is there's just apparently there's quite a large percentage of counterfeit stuff out there.
Yeah.
So when you go overseas, now you also hear this stuff on the news about how the same medicines are being sold in various countries,
right.
you know, for a lot less money. So I see the value in that regard. And I think it depends on where you are.
Okay.
One of the tips I read was, you know, you look for a legit pharmacy.
Okay.
You know, just someplace that looks like it's really a pharmacy, not someplace, you know, not a table in the market, you know, next to the tacos. You don't want to risk something like that. And, you know, look at the labels, look at the boxes. I remember even in Yemen, I would go into a pharmacy and I could kind of tell, okay, well, if this is from whatever Merck, I don't know if Merck even exists now, but you know, one of the big companies, I could recognize the label. I knew what it was supposed to look like. There was no misspelled words on there. You know, kind of like these phishing emails you get now where you can tell it's not from PayPal because they misspell PayPal, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Look for stuff like that are obvious clues that somebody did this at home, you know? And that's kind of one of the things I wanted to kind of emphasize in general is the more you can prepare before you go, the better time you're going to have. Mm, now sure. Things are going to happen.
Right.
There's, you know, the chronic stuff you can prepare for, the acute stuff is going to happen to you and you've got to deal with it. Mm-hmm. But I also thought, you know, with medicines, maybe it's like food. You know, if you want to find a good restaurant, you try to find a local who can recommend the best place. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's a tourist company or the hotel you're staying in, or I know y'all are not in hotels, usually in a truck, but but there's bound to be places there where you could find somebody that you could trust, you know, whether it's a tour guide or somebody else that's not looking out for themselves,
right.
To give you advice on where to get stuff. And then, but the whole thing, I know years ago, people would cross the border and, you know, buy all their medicine and come back. I think now there's limits to what you can actually bring back.
Yeah.
I think you're
so
right.
You have to be real careful about that too. Now, if you're on a long-term trip, like, you know, like y'all do and you're in Mexico the whole time, well, that's different.
Right.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah.
The whole international thing is tough. I may be jumping the gun, but I was looking yesterday, the CDC traveler health website is just loaded and loaded with information.
Okay.
And one of the things I found was, you know, different. There's something called, let's see if I can find the word, International Narcotics Control Board or something like that. And that gives you, you can click on a country and it'll tell you what the rules are for bringing like narcotics in and other drugs. And so I went down the rabbit hole with Japan, right? So the advice that I read was that you should go to the website of the embassy, we know wherever you're going. So I did both. I went to the U.S. embassy website in Japan, and then I went to the Japanese embassy in the U.S. and clicked around until I found, you know, all the drug, what can you bring prescription wise, that kind of stuff. And there's some pretty random stuff that you could get arrested for if you have on your person in Japan, like Sudafed.
Oh. Or,
and I, again, don't quote me on that.
Still. Or,
yeah.
Trust but verify, you know, look, but like if, even if you have a, I know I've jumped subjects here, but even if you have a valid prescription for whatever it is, in America, everything's legit. Some countries will not allow that.
Yeah.
Anyway, no matter what, you know, whether it's good here or not, they're not going to allow it. So prepare.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't assume, you know, don't assume that just because you have a prescription for it here, that it's going to be fine in Japan or Algeria or wherever you're going.
Yeah.
But yeah, as far as buying stuff, my advice would be take as much as you can before you go. And I know EpiPens are crazy expensive, even on insurance sometimes they are. So I see the value of doing that.
Just us trying to save a buck.
Yeah, we're just cheap, Jay. This is really what it comes down to.
Well,
yeah.
So, everybody is cheap when it comes to those.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's,
and that's the thing. You've got a lot of stuff, and that a lot of people take stuff that is really expensive.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be on a long trip, you need to have enough to last you.
Yeah.
And you've got to think ahead. I think that's kind of what I have observed over the years I've done this is, you know, and you could call this top 10 reasons not to roll up in the pharmacy drive-thru on your way to the airport on a Saturday morning. That would be the long thing. Because people do that.
Do they
roll? I'm sure. Ugh.
It happened. It has happened. You know, I'm going to XYZ tomorrow, and they show up at 3:30 on or 4 on a Friday when all the doctors have already gone home, and they thought they would just get this, and this, and well, they don't have a refill, or it's too early, and their insurance won't pay for it, and it's one of those expensive medicines.
Yep.
There's all kinds of things that can go wrong
that
can be fixed. I shouldn't say go wrong. They're just not going to go at all. Those things can be fixed if you look ahead.
Yeah.
But if you wait till literally you're on your way to town, it's tough. I had two things happen recently, actually. One lady came to me a month before she traveled, and she was just going to Europe, where she could probably get anything she needed there safely. Yeah. But she said, I'm traveling on this date. I need this medicine. I'm going to be gone for several weeks. What do I do? So we looked at her situation, and I saw, well, this is not a controlled substance. She's got refills. It's not going to expire. All the boxes were checked. And I said, well, come back a week before. We'll try to run it. If your insurance doesn't cover it, it's not going to be expensive anyway. And she did. She followed the right steps. Mm. Had another lady a week ago, and she came up, and this wasn't her fault. She had kind of an urgent thing, but she was like literally in her car in the afternoon saying, I need this medicine today. I'm going to be gone for a week. But it was a controlled drug. I had to get permission from the doctor to fill it early. And we got lucky with her because the doctor happened to be standing by the phone when I called. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you don't want to wait.
No.
And you don't want to assume that anything you take is going to be okay. So those are the kind of the broad strokes. We can get in the weeds, but
I mean, that's, we actually just had to go through all of that. I mean, we're in Mexico and they're a little bit more lenient. Like typically my understanding of Mexico, and this is again, like, don't quote me because I'm not a medical professional, but my understanding of Mexico is like, as long as you have your prescription from the US, like you're okay to get something down here, but that's not true of every country, obviously. But we had to go through this whole thing. We just talked about it in one of our videos about how we prepared and started the medical process. Like, I think it was like a month or two in advance before we left, because we had to get updates on typhoid, yellow fever, Hep B, like our vaccines. And so we went to the travel clinic, and we also got like malaria treatments, and we got an antibiotic in case we got sick, and a Z-Pack. Like we got everything taken care of. And we also got like regular medications, like simple medicines that we take, and got like, you know, 6 months supply. But then again, it was the complication of like covering it with insurance and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it is something that like we can speak from experience.
Oh, yeah.
You have to start early.
Yeah. And it's really funny that you say, you know, make sure, like, you know, whatever type of medicine is okay in whatever country you're going to, because I mean, we crossed into Mexico from California, and in California, while you can use this for medical purposes, weed is legal in California.
We're not consumers of the weed,
but like we were approaching the border and there are huge signs in Mexico saying weed is illegal in Mexico. And if they find it,
even medical marijuana.
And so it's just really interesting. It's like, oh yeah, like even if it's legal here in the States, it may not be legal wherever you're going. And that could, you could end up in quite a bit of trouble.
Yeah. Some countries take, like you mentioned Japan, and I remember Korea, actually, we didn't encounter this, but somebody told us afterwards that even such simple, I think it's like,
Advil.
No, I don't think it was Advil. It was like an ADHD medicine or something. Like there's,
yeah, that was one of the Japan,
was it
things on the Japan list?
Okay.
Yeah, the ADHD stuff.
Yeah. Cause they said like, apparently it's completely illegal there. Like that, whatever, I'm not a pharmacist, so I don't know, but like whatever that substance is, it is completely not allowed in the country. Like, so you have to either like wean yourself off the medicine or there's like no way to bypass it, I think. Mm-hmm. So there's just things to be aware of when you're traveling. Like if you take something regularly, like check to see the country's regulations. A lot of countries will be fine, but we talked about like bringing medicine. We are traveling to some pretty remote places. As a pharmacist, is there anything that you recommend always traveling with? Like maybe a first aid kit, maybe an antibiotic? Like what would you recommend for people like us?
Well, for situations like y'all, you mentioned the things that are important. Like if you've got something for traveler's diarrhea, not just over-the-counter stuff, but if you've got a prescription antibiotic, you know, there's something you can take for that, and that's good to have around. I came up with this sort of basic over-the-counter kit, and I have a packing list. This is something I recommend to you. I think y'all probably do this. I have like an overall packing list for every time I take a trip, and I just check it off. You know, sometimes I need it, sometimes I don't. If I go on a trip and figure out I need something on that trip, I'll add it to my list, and, you know, just if I don't need it the next time, it just checks off automatically. But anyway, I do that with the medical stuff too. You may not need all of this all the time. And if you're more prone to one thing than the other, you may not need it at all. But it's kind of a good basic in this, like, of course, Band-Aids, you know, some kind of bandage situation with some antibiotic cream or ointment to go with that. Those things are going to happen. Some like hydrocortisone cream that's over the counter for rashes and itches and bug bites and all that kind of stuff. Motion sickness pills.
Oh, that's a good one for you.
That is a good one.
I don't think we have any.
Because you just never know. I mean, if you're going, like, our family goes to Gatlinburg every other Christmas or so, and we go to Dollywood. Mm-hmm. And I know there's going to be roller coasters, and I can't handle them like I used to, but I still love them. Yeah. So I always make sure I take, you know, the motion sickness stuff. And, you know, driving around the mountains, you never know. Sometimes I take it for me, and sometimes I take it for others to make sure that they're okay when I'm driving or whatever.
Yeah.
nausea medicine, because that can, I mean, that's just miserable to be nauseous. And if you have something, now the best nausea medicine is prescription though. So it's not over the counter, but it's something that I would try to keep around personally.
Okay.
Talk to the doctor about that. Again, the diarrhea meds, hand sanitizer, I carry, if you've seen these little alcohol prep pads that diabetics a lot of times use before they prick their finger or whatever, I carry a handful of those little prep pads because they're good for cleaning off a cut. Ooh. They're good for cleaning off a toilet seat. You know, there's all kinds of good things that you can use as little pads. And they're sealed. You don't have to carry a bottle of alcohol. And you can just carry a couple in your wallet or whatever.
Yeah.
Allergy or cold medicines. Mm-hmm. This past Gatlinburg trip, my brother-in-law got sick, and I had all the stuff.
You were ready.
I could take care of him. I was the pharmacist of the family, which just happens a lot. But like, if you're prone to that, especially, like, you're talking about the EpiPen because you're prone to, you know, certain allergies. If you're prone to allergies, then, you know, take something with you. Mm-hmm. But, again, Japan, I think Sudafed was one of the things they didn't allow. So Zyrtec D is great for me. You know, they're not sponsoring us, but that works well for me.
Uh-huh.
But I probably couldn't take it some places.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful. Even in the States, it's somewhat controlled because of the whole meth thing.
Yeah.
Pain relievers.
Yeah.
Advil, Tylenol, carry both of those, Excedrin if you need it, whatever you need to get over your aches and pains. If you're gonna be like y'all probably in traveling to warm places, I try to carry like a little powder packs of electrolyte solution.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the one we have is at my store is Liquid IV. Yeah. There's Propel. There's all kinds of other things. And you don't have to carry that liquid on the plane, yep, or whatever. You just carry the little packet and you can drop it in a bottle of water.
Those are my favorite.
And it just makes you feel better when you get, you know, dehydrated or close to it.
Yeah.
If you wear contacts or stuff, you got to have all that stuff, you know, contact solution. I like to carry a pair or two of rubber gloves with me. I know it's not medicine, but just handy. And then for me, like, I've got eye drops, nasal spray, cough drops, that sort of thing. Okay. And this is not exactly the over-the-counter kit, but I did think about this. I'm a CPAP user. You probably still see the lines on my thing this morning. But you have to be, if you're going somewhere where the voltage is different, you want to make sure that your machine is either dual voltage or some sort of way to adapt it.
Yeah.
And then also have, of course, the adapter to fit the plug where you're going.
I would not have thought about that in terms of medical necessities.
That's a really good point.
You
know, and I was lucky. My CPAP was dual voltage, but I think a lot of people assume that if you find the right plug, if you can get it plugged into the wall, it's fine. But it's not.
No. Oh my gosh. And that's a necessity for you.
Yeah.
That's really. I would not have thought about that. Okay.
All right.
Yeah. So you know, that's just another thing to, and going. This kind of ties in what you asked first about buying stuff overseas. Domestic travel, you could probably find any of that wherever you go.
Right.
Yeah.
If you have an accident or wherever, you can go to the urgent care. I don't know about Chattanooga, but I mean around here, urgent cares pop up. You know, they're racing with Dollar General to see how many stores will be there.
So true.
That's so funny.
So you could throw a rock and hit an urgent care in the States pretty much now.
Yeah.
So you can get care, and there's going to be a pharmacy somewhere you can get the stuff.
Yeah.
So my dilemma is, what do I take and what do I get when I'm there?
Yeah.
Because I'm kind of a overpacker. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to be on a plane, you know, I'm a minimalist. Mm-hmm. But if this is me and my wife in the Tahoe, we're the Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah,
we have everything.
We pack everything too.
Every contingency.
Yeah.
Same.
If there's space, why not take it? I already have it. I don't want to buy it.
Yeah.
You know, other people in my family are like, I'll just buy it when I get there if I need it. But little stuff like that. I have a little zip bag. I should have brought it, but just a little zip bag, and I fill it up with whatever I might need. I know that's my medicine bag.
Yep.
And it stays packed pretty much. If I need the nausea medicine in between trips, I know where to go to get it.
Yep.
And but I can just kind of grab it and add whatever I need as I go. Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Handy.
That's good. We need to get you some nausea medicine. Poor Chris. He gets so road sick. I've been doing most of the driving because I fit behind the steering wheel better because it's like really short leg space. Like, our truck is so old. But poor Chris, he's over there in the passenger seat just holding on for dear life, sick of the dog.
I can't. She's like, why don't you work? Why don't you answer emails or something on your phone? I'm like, because I would vomit everywhere right now if I looked away from the road.
So. Every now and then I'll turn a corner a little too fast and I'll hear, from the passenger seat, and I could tell I've just made him sick with one little movement. We got to get you some medicine.
I know.
We're going to go find a pharmacy.
And then, I don't know if you tried the patches. You know, there's the behind-the-ear scope patches that are better for a longer-term nausea.
Do they work well, pretty well?
I think so.
Okay.
I bought some. We went on a cruise, and I bought some, but the cruise was flat and I didn't need it.
Okay.
And
so I
haven't actually used it in a while. But I think it,
we may have to try that.
His is kind of unpredictable. Like anything, it's really any other time besides
it's curvy car. Roads or if I look at a roller coaster wrong. Yeah, like you said earlier.
We have a 15 hour ocean ferry ride coming up overnight soon, like to cross to mainland Mexico.
Yeah.
That might be the time to test it out, because I don't know how he's gonna do on a boat.
She thinks I'm just gonna be miserable. I think I'm just gonna
find out.
I'll be fine.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. I'll
do an episode.
This will be my
Titanic. It just depends on whether it's rocky or not, or whatever the right word is.
Yeah.
Rough seas.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, I hope not. That might make me sick too. Oh man.
I think it's important. Like for me, I've kind of been through a series. When I went to South Africa, I had a cholera shot.
Yeah.
That's all I had to do. I actually still have the bottle. My mom saved it from 1980.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah. So I've got my cholera shot still. And then when I went to Ukraine, I got like maybe hep A and hep B or one or the other. But that one, I don't want to speak out of turn, but I found out really quick I was going. I didn't have a lot of time. Mm-hmm. So they gave me like an immune something shot, immune globulin shot that gave me some instant coverage.
Okay.
But then later when I went to Yemen, I needed a lot of things, especially yeah. when we knew we were going to live. Mm-hmm. But you can't just show up at the clinic. Again, be prepared. Yeah, don't assume. Mm-hmm. You can't show up at the clinic a week before and say, give me all my shots.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of the shots have series, of course, and you start with one, you wait a couple months, you get another one, and you wait a couple months before it's actually gives you the coverage that you want. Mm-hmm. So you don't. You have to give that time. You have to look that up. You have to figure it out. And maybe you have to figure out where you can get it mm-hmm. because yeah. where you live may not have that shot.
Yep.
And yeah. when we lived overseas and say our kids needed vaccine updates or whatever, sometimes they would have them and sometimes they wouldn't. Mm-hmm. So we had to plan like, if we're going to be in London, I remember we were going to be in London. So we found a clinic and got our kids some of their, you know, just childhood vaccine updates while we were there. Mm-hmm. I was going to, I can't remember where I had to go, but I was going, I think, to Kenya, somewhere in Africa, where I needed yellow fever
right.
and had never had that. And so I had to find that.
Mm-hmm.
And so these things, whether it's getting your prescription refilled or getting the insurance to cover it or getting the doctor to authorize something, those kind of things, or getting your shots, all those things can happen,
yeah.
but none of them happen instantly.
Right.
And so that goes back to my, you know, if you show up in the drive-through on Saturday before your plane leaves on Sunday, that's a challenge.
Yeah.
So
no, for sure.
So my point, my hope is that, you know, maybe, you know, this will help somebody to think ahead.
Absolutely.
You know, not assume, plan ahead. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, if you plan ahead, most of your obstacles can be overcome and you can have a good time and you can tell the story and not be the story.
Yeah. I think, yeah, I mean, we could speak to experience and like plan ahead. I think I read start 2 months ahead at a minimum, but like Chris and I, we were getting a typhoid update because I think typhoid's one of the vaccines. So we got the vaccine the first time and then we did the oral the second time because it lasts longer.
Yeah, I've done both.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had to do them like 2 years apart, but we were due
two
right.
2 days apart.
No, 2 years. The second dose was like 2 years apart. And so we both had to get our typhoid update like right before we left. And there was only one prescription left in town. So we were both.
I don't know. So I'm safe. She's not.
No. But they had to like special order that. They had to special order that and malaria because nowhere in Chattanooga had enough for our needs. Mm-hmm. So they had to like, it took us weeks to get all the medicines that we need, even though it's only going to, it was just a couple things. So yeah, plan ahead is the moral of the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned something. I mean, that's another great example is the malaria.
Yeah.
If you're going to place with malaria medicine, and I haven't taken it in a while, but normally you have to start a week or two before
right.
Before you enter the area.
Yeah.
And so if you come to the pharmacy in, you know, Mathiston, Mississippi, we have people that travel all the time. I had a customer last week that went big game hunting in Africa and it was, you know, amazing pictures and all this kind of yeah. stuff. Now she didn't ask me for anything before she left. So she's got it taken care of. But the point is I have a half a box of malaria medicine in my pharmacy right now. And it's because of one guy that's taken a couple of trips. And I'm not even sure it's still in date, but it may not be enough for somebody. And
yeah.
so if you
yeah.
come expecting it to be filled today, I may not have enough for you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
When I say any pharmacy that's dealing with an obscure, lesser used medicine, you know, they don't want to keep a bunch of stuff that's going to go out of date and end up being,
yeah.
you know, expiring. So, that kind of thing, especially. And, you know, if you're taking something expensive and they don't keep it in stock all the time, or if they special order it for you, it can be ordered. But again, it's not an instant. It's not going to happen immediately.
Yeah.
yeah.
So those kind of things have to be taken into account.
You don't want to skip it.
No.
Don't skip it.
Yeah.
on the important You're right. stuff
I
like that.
No. I like how you said you want to tell the story, not be the story. I like that
That's
a lot.
Really good.
Yeah.
Jay.
And this I don't mean to sound harsh, but because I'm sure you've heard this saying in all kinds of life aspects, but the whole thing is, you know, a lack of planning on your part does not necessarily constitute an emergency on someone else's
yes.
part.
Yeah.
That's
so, and that especially applies here. You may have forgotten or just thought you could do it. You being very general here. But if you come in and, you know, I'll be glad to help you. I want to help you. But, and I mean, any pharmacist is going to try their best to help you get to where you're going safely and get you what you need. But there's just limitations.
Yeah.
yeah.
To just the realities, we may not have it that day. Your insurance may not want to pay for it. And if it's a $500 drug that you have to take, you might need to call the insurance and get that vacation override.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's very good. Yeah. It's practical advice. I mean, I think a lot of people just, they pack their swimsuit and their clothes and their camera and they're ready to go. And guilty. Yeah. Truthfully, we were not prepared enough for Thailand like we should have been. We should have had typhoid and stuff, and we did not. So lessons learned. Thankfully, we came out okay. But yeah, if we had had an emergency, it would have been our fault entirely. But go prepared.
Yeah, and domestically, domestically it's different. Yeah. International is tough because you want to take enough stuff with you. You take all the letters, the prescriptions, the labels. I was going to recommend, if you have a, I know this is just for the video, but if you have a big bottle like this, sorry, that's a terrible look. You may not need all that.
Yeah.
Get your little bottle. Uh-huh. They look the same size on camera, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
We know what you're going for.
get a label and put it on a smaller bottle. Take just what you need, a little extra, whatever. You don't have to take your whole prescription.
Yeah.
Take what you need. Yeah. And if you're in the States and you get in a bind, you could probably get it transferred to a pharmacy wherever you are. But even state laws are different.
Mm-hmm.
So some things I can transfer back and forth however many times you need to. But if you take something that's a controlled substance, you may not be able to get it controlled. And even if you take a new prescription and you're from Chattanooga and you show up in Arizona with this narcotic pain prescription that's perfectly legitimate, but they don't know you.
Yeah.
You may not be able to get it filled.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
So there's, you have to take all that into consideration, before you go.
Yeah.
And never,
even in the States,
never pack it in your checked luggage either. We've done that mistake.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good one.
We've done that before. And we've had like accidental overnight layovers where we missed our plane, but they've already moved our luggage onto the next city. So don't pack it in your checked luggage.
Always, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I read something else too about that I hadn't thought about. Not only do you not have access to it for a night or forever if it's lost, but the temperature where the bags are is not the same as where you are.
No, it's not. True.
It could get super hot. It could get super cold. It could maybe get moist. Uh-huh. And, that could damage some things.
Yeah. I hadn't even thought about temperature. So, that's smart.
That's a great point.
I hadn't either, really. But, I mean, that's something that...
Yeah.
It affects medicine.
Just an extra reason to keep it with you.
Yeah.
For sure. This has been good.
Yeah, Jay, thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on and, talking about this, because I feel like this is one of those topics that people don't really think about, when they're traveling,
But it makes some people really nervous to think that they aren't going to get the medical care they need overseas. We have a lot of people who are thinking about retiring overseas, and they're kind of nervous about, getting medical care abroad. I think a lot of people are just, it's the unknown that scares them.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of things are, to quote our friend Jackie, figure outable.
Yeah.
We like that word. she kind of coined that for us recently, but things are figure outable. And I think you just proved that for us. So thank you so much.
So if anybody wants to learn more about you, find out anything, where can people find you or anything that you want to share before we jump off here?
Well, it's funny because most of my social stuff is more involved around my side hustle, which is food writing than pharmacy.
Absolutely.
So you may not find out much about pharmacy about me, but my handles are eats18. It's the word eats, EATSONEATE, which just, I write about the eats that I ate. I'm the one. So that's, X and Instagram is there. And then I actually co-host a couple of podcasts, Guys of a Certain Age and Vittles and Vitals. So that's kind of where my writing has gone to. I've kind of gotten into the podcasting side of it. But and then I have a blog also called eats18.com.
Okay. Cool.
But it's mostly food stuff there. So
cool.
That's sort of my, I guess if that's my jam.
Yeah.
That's a bad pun.
Well,
I love it.
If people want to learn about some we'll food and then email you about some medication questions,
don't advertise that. No, we're not going to do that. Go to your own doctor.
Go to your local pharmacist that you trust. And if you don't have one, find one that you can trust.
Go follow him for food.
Yes.
All right. Jay, thank you so much for being here with us. It was so good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to What No One Tells You with Chris and Sarah. If you have a comment or question that you want answered on the air, be sure to send us a message to hello@chrisandsarah.com, or you can call or text our phone number at 423-825-9572. Thanks for listening.